Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary. Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi there, and welcome again to the Explaining History podcast. I'm going to look tonight, once again, at Tombstone by Yang Jisheng, which is a personal history of Mao's Great Famine during the Great Leap Forward, from 1958 to 62. The single most devastating famine in recorded human history that killed anywhere between the author Yang Jisheng puts it at 36 million, Frank Dakota puts it as at least 40 million, and some estimates put it as high as 70 million. Some go up as high as 120 million, but my personal sense is that it is somewhere between the 40 to 70 million range. The accolades that Yang Jisheng has had, actually, this is a very important writer to look at. If you remember, a couple of weeks ago I did a podcast about conditions on freedoms during the post-Mao era, which are were relatively improved during Deng Xiaoping's early years, and currently under Xi Jinping are taking a nosedive. So Yang Jisheng to be publishing this book, this was 2014, I believe, but to be writing as a dissident writer currently is pretty bold stuff. On some of the reviews on the back, Anne Applebaum, of whom I've mentioned before, who wrote an excellent book on the Soviet gulags, refers to him as China's Solzhenitsyn, which I think is a fair comment. And the point is that it's the first mass published Chinese account of by somebody who actually lived through the famine. So Without further ado, let's look at a key point that he raises. One of the reasons why you get famines, and famines on the scale that we have seen in the 20th century, is that it's very often a meeting of unfortunate environmental conditions which produce things like droughts and food shortages. But these morph into famines when the state and ideology are put into play. The needs of the state were such that shortages have, and this is one of the many aspects of the state behaviour that contributes to the famine, that shortages had to be ignored or had to be refuted. The idea that the Great Leap Forward, which was designed to create economic transition and also material abundance, was actually resulting in hunger, had to be denied strenuously. So let's look at Tombstone. So in the chapter, The Epicenter of the Disaster, Yang Zhisheng writes a section called The Violent Campaign Against False Reporting Output. He writes, excessively high requisition quotas made procurement difficult. If farmers were unable to hand over the required amount, the government would accuse production teams of concealing grain. By this time, the farms had been collectivised, but also entire regions had been communalised. That meant that villages had been forced to together. Village kitchens had been stripped out. Kitchens had been stripped out of houses. Peasants had been forced to eat communally, which was a great way of controlling the grain for the entire village. The whole point, of course, was to extract as much grain from the countryside and either sell it as export cash crops, so selling rice overseas to gain foreign credits to buy an import machinery, or to feed workers in the cities, and to set up the peasants as the kind of, if they didn't comply with this, as the kind of the scapegoat, the counter-revolutionary scapegoats that were causing all the trouble and ruining it for everybody. Just like Stalin's collectivization and his war against the kulaks, Mao followed the playbook note for note, and made sure that there was a violent campaign in the countryside of extraction. A struggle between the two roads of socialism and capitalism was launched to counteract the alleged withholding of grain. The campaign used political pressure, mental torture, and ruthless violence to extort every last kernel of grain or seed from the peasants. Anyone who uttered the slightest protest was beaten, sometimes fatally. A meeting at Rooster Mountain pushed the campaign against grain hoarding to a climax. Li Ruoying, the wife of Zhang Shufan, was chair of Jingyang Prefecture's Federation of Women. In June 1959, the Prefectural Party Committee had her lead a work group to Rooster Mountain Commune to report on a pilot project to produce 5,000 kilos of paddy per mu of land. Mu is something equivalent to a hectare. The brainchild of the county party secretary, Li Ruoying's team stayed at Rooster Mountain for a month, during which they learned that this model commune was a fraud and that the peasants were starving. So here we have the kind of the Maoist equivalent of the Potemkin village, the thing that appears to be harmonious and productive and functional on the outside, but in the reality is that all this mass productivity is simply just plunder. The peasants aren't producing surpluses of grain. The state is just taking not just the regular surplus, but but also anything, the subsistence, anything that the farmers have to live on. So being as farming since the very beginnings of agriculture is all about the kind of the art of creating food surpluses, this is a sort of like a war on the concept of farming itself. So starving peasants were soon discovered by some members of the party who really were, you know, had consciences and were concerned and shocked by what they uncovered. Li Wuyang wrote to the prefectural party secretary, Liu Jianwen, requesting 105,000 kilos of grain. But Liu refused and labelled Li Wuyang a right deviationist. A cadre sent to Rooster Mountain to replace Li also truthfully reported the hunger of commune members, only to be labelled a vacillator. There was a great deal of fear and anxiety involved in accepting the truth about the situation. Anyone who agreed to kilos of 105,000 kilos of grain being sent to a region had to tacitly accept that there was hunger there. To tacitly accept that there was hunger there was to accept that Mao's key policy not only had failed, but was turning into a catastrophe. Mao himself had toured China during the Great Leap Forward, and had been, obviously his tour had been stage managed to prevent even him from seeing the consequences of the Great Leap Forward, and he would probably have chosen to ignore it himself anyway had he seen. Li's replacement, Wang Binglin, tried to appease party secretary Liu Jianwen by organising an on-the-spot meeting to oppose false reporting of output and private withholding. The arcane official formulation for hoarding. All that was produced were rice husks covered by a thin layer of grain. The prefectural party committee ordered local cadres to stifle the public outcry, stop villagers from fleeing in search of food, and halt the closure of communal kitchens. So villagers very soon, under the conditions of the famine, began to try to take it as what action they could do to survive. The causes of the famine are as follows. Firstly, there had been a totally misguided policy, the product of Soviet agronomists, particularly a guy called Trofim Lysenko, who's a well-known fraud in scientific terms. I've talked about Lysenko before, who advised the all-too-eager-to-listen Maoists that productivity could be increased by planting rice plants in rice paddies more closely together, or by planting them more deeply. And it obviously, rice farmers over thousands of years had learned exactly how to cultivate rice, and didn't need a know-it-all Soviet agronomist who was also a man who willfully distorted the figures to suit the outcomes that he wanted. Anyway, so rice harvests failed. There were requisitions, there were quotas on communes to take huge surpluses of rice, leaving villages that were dependent on being able to put food away for season, you know, colder seasons and seasons when rice didn't grow, to store that for times of dearth. There was a huge removal of peasant workers from the land. Communes were set up, and massive labour armies were diverted to largely pointless engineering projects. Dams which were built in the wrong place that would silt up and then break their walls, within a generation. When you take 100,000 people from a province off the land, then you take all the manpower that would normally make food grow. There were party bosses and cadres who had to beat work norms. They had to.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
To make sure that the targets they had been set for productivity weren't just reached, but they were breached. And in doing so, they would work some peasants for, 100 hours nonstop without food or sleep. And normally about two-thirds of the way through that, people would simply drop dead. Decision by the government to be exporting food during a famine showed a kind of a criminal disregard for the fate of ordinary Chinese people. But Mao had to appear to his to nations that were willing to listen, particularly nations in just outside the Soviet sphere, the places such as Albania, that the Soviet Union, that Maoist China was able to outproduce the Soviet Union. Much of this, Mao said that he wished to leapfrog over Great Britain and become a more important economic power than Great Britain in the late 1950s, which in his reckoning, now that seems sort of slightly absurd to us because Britain is a much smaller and diminished power, but obviously it really was still quite an impressive world economic power in the late 1950s. But it was really the Soviet Union that Mao was kind of talking to. Stalin had passed away. The new replacement, Khrushchev, Mao had very little time for and saw him as a kind of a political nonentity. He saw Khrushchev as being a kind of a joke, really, and believed himself to be the key figure of world revolution. Part of the point of the Great Leap Forward was to show the Soviet Union, well, you had the five-year plans under Stalin, but here's how it's really done. We want to do better than you in a shorter amount of time. And in doing so, we will communicate to the rest of the communist world who's really in charge. So Yang Zhisheng writes, anyone who claimed to have no grain was labelled as a negator of the three banners, a negator of the great harvest, or a right deviationist, and was subject to struggle. Struggle means to a struggle session, and what that normally entailed is if you were in a village, you'd be taken up in front of the rest of the villagers and forced to denounce yourself for hours and hours and hours on end, normally with an angry party card just shouting at you and telling you to stop telling lies and to tell even more degrading secrets about yourself. And so the person would be driven half mad through kind of anxiety and fear. The audience kind of knew how to please the cadre and how to respond, and it was normally by whipping itself up into ever greater levels of rage towards this traitor in their midst, even though most people knew full well, rationally, the individual hadn't done any wrong. Yang Zhisheng writes, if communal kitchens closed due to lack of food, this was labelled the masses threatening the cadres, and abandoning starving children along the roadsides was labelled an assault against the party. Punishments were inflicted on cadres and villagers alike. In Guangshan County, 2,241 people were beaten, 105 fatally, and 526 cadres were stripped of their official positions. The number of deaths from physical abuse rose even higher towards the end of the campaign. In the Xinyang incident, Chao Peihui describes the situation in one village. At the end of September 1959, Wang Pingui, a member of the Wang Xiaowan production team, was forced to hand over grain kept in his home and was beaten with a shoulder pole, dying of his injuries 5 days later. Not long after Wang's death, the rest of his four-member household died of starvation. Of course, you take the last breadwinner out of the situation. There is no safety net for everybody else. It continues. In October 1959, Liu Mingzhu of the Lu Wan production team, upon failing to hand over any grain, was bound and suspended in mid-air and beaten, then doused with ice-cold water. He died the next day. On October the 13th, 1959, Wang Taishu of the Chen Wan production team, upon failing to hand over any grain, was bound and beaten with shoulder poles and rods, dying 4 days later. His 14-year-old daughter, Wang Pingrong, subsequently died of starvation. On October the 15th, 1959, Zhang Zhirong of the Zhang Wan production team, upon failing to hand over any grain, was bound and beaten to death with kindling and poles. The brigade's cadre used tongs to insert rice and soybeans into the deceased's anus while shouting, "Now you can grow grains out of your corpse." Zhang left behind children aged 8 and 10, who subsequently died of starvation. So part of what we see here is a pattern of kind of mass trauma to society. The Maoist state had literally smashed peasant China apart using requisitioning of food, using requisitioning of manpower, using the destruction of the traditional structures of peasant life through communalization and the creation of communal kitchens, which in effect meant that kitchens and cooking utensils would be ripped out of family homes, and that the only thing that individuals could do would be to be dependent on being fed at a communal level. Once again, controlling the supply of food. By controlling the supply of food in a country that is abundant with food, the Maoist government was able to bring the entire population to a degree of serfdom, and perhaps even slavery, you could call it. Liu Wenkai, secretary of the Guangshan County Party Secretariat, was in charge of the anti-hoarding campaign in Huidan's People's Commune, during which he flogged more than 40 peasants, four of whom died. Some 93% of the commune-level cadres in Guangshan County led such campaigns and personally took part in beatings. On November the 28th, 1960, a report was sent to Henan Party Secretary Wu Jipu. In the calamity at Guangshan County Huidan's People's Commune in the autumn of 1959, the commune's average yield per mu was 86 kilos, for a total of 5.955 million kilos. The Commune's party committee reported that the yield of 313 kilos per mu for a total of 23.5 million kilos. The procurement quota set by the county was 6 million kilos, which exceeded the Commune's total grain yield. In order to achieve the procurement quota, every means had to be taken to oppose false reporting. This idea of false reporting was a kind of a fiction in itself, that no, people weren't false reporting. People were unable to produce the amount of food that was demanded, or the peasants did what the peasants had done throughout Chinese history and put some aside so that they didn't starve later on. To oppose false reporting and private withholding, every scrap of food had to be seized from the masses. The final procurement was 5.185 million kilos. All of the communal kitchens were closed down and deaths followed. So private kitchens were closed down, family kitchens were closed down, but also communal kitchens were as well. The villagers are left with no means of feeding themselves. Liu Wenkai and the Commune Party Committee attributed the kitchen closures and deaths to attacks by well-to-do middle peasants and sabotage by class enemies, and to the struggle between the two paths of socialism and capitalism. This was a really interesting kind of fiction, in that party cadres said, well, look, you know, we're fighting a war to the death with capitalism here. This is messy. And part of what they meant was hoarding was capitalism. That hiding grain so you can feed yourself tomorrow was capitalism, because they said, well, that's a kind of speculation, isn't it? And you're probably speculating that if you hoard your grain now, then the price of grain will go up next week and you'll make a profit, making you a capitalist blood-sucking exploiter, right deviationist, running dog, etc. So this was the mentality. And the way that I think is useful to think about it is that the Great Leap Forward is a kind of and the famine that results from it is a kind of like social warfare, really. It is a war mainly against China's peasants. They weren't the only people to starve, but mainly it was China's peasants. And because they had the foodstuffs that Mao believed would power China into this new age of industrial abundance, they had to be expropriated. Mao didn't really care how much bloodshed that resulted in. Okay, so that's this week's podcast. If you remember, check us out at www.explaininghistory.org. And there's always something new and interesting going up there each week. Normally this podcast or a bit of writing that I do or what have you. And come and visit us at the Explaining History Facebook group, where there's interesting articles and bits and pieces that I managed to procure go up there too. Thanks so much, everybody, and thanks to all the people that sponsor the podcast via Patreon. We're always grateful, and I'll catch you on the next Explaining History podcast. All the best. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.